Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for the Week in Health. Our pal, Dr. Jeremy Silver, joining us. Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. How is Dr. Silver today?
Good morning, Dean. Good to talk to you.
When you're not feeling well, do you go see a doctor or do you just self-diagnose yourself? It occurred to me when I said, how are you? If somebody wasn't feeling well, they'd go see a doctor. What if you are the doctor? What do you do?
Well, you know, Dean, I look in the mirror and I say, self, what should I do? No, you know, my wife is a nurse, and generally speaking, I'll defer to her because, you know, she basically is the smartest person I know and has a lot of good insight.
Oh, okay. He doesn't like his bedside manner. but that's a whole psychological issue.
I'm not even going to go there.
That's a whole... Yeah, maybe we need to get Mrs. Silver on the show one of these
Good
weeks.
Idea. You will dispatch it to both of you quickly.
Why are we dealing with the number two Silver on the segment every week? We've got,
she's the smartest one.
She just heard that she's the smartest one in the house. So I've been hearing stories the past couple of weeks about incidents of COVID on the rise in certain states around the U.S., and I've been hearing stories about people having effects of long COVID from, you know, the original COVID when it hit 3-4 years ago. Where are we with all of this? Are we seeing an uptick? What's the latest here in the state of Illinois? How concerned should we be about all of this?
Great questions. We are seeing a new variant nicknamed the FLIRT variant, F-L-I-R-T, and these nicknames just come based on where the mutations are on the protein itself. But anytime the variant becomes, there's a new dominant variant in the mix, there's going to be some escape of the immune system, and so you're going to just automatically see an uptick in cases. In terms of, you know, where we're at right now, small uptick. The wastewater is a good way to track viral activity. Without getting into the nitty-gritty, we see increases in wastewater viral activity when it's high in the community, and we're not seeing that, at least not in Illinois. Now, there is in the West Coast and then in Florida. I looked at the map this morning. There is an increase in COVID activity, but it's minimal. So there's no indication to suggest that this variant is more severe. Likewise, there's no indication to suggest that it's escaping the last round of vaccine boosters that came out in the fall of 2023, last fall. So I think, you know, we'll see how it goes. And it's the summertime and people are outdoors, so maybe that mitigates things a bit.
So are people experiencing... symptoms of long COVID? Are people still without taste or smell? Are people still, you know, living with the effects of the first go round of COVID?
Yeah, long COVID is a tricky one, simply because there's so many vague symptoms that can be associated with it. Let's just start with chronic fatigue, for instance, which can be attributed to so many things, whether it's stress, lack of sleep, or some other immune condition that can be commingled with this. So very difficult to diagnose. It certainly seems that it's real. And there's a small percentage of people, and the numbers vary, but in the low digits, who are still suffering from this. I don't personally know how much of it is associated with the earlier COVID variants that were more severe versus whether we're going to see as much long COVID as we develop these kind of variants further and further out from the initial pandemic. That's just a level of complication beyond my expertise. But I think you definitely see people that have it. I personally know folks that have been struggling with this, and I don't know that there are any great answers.
Do you see people in the emergency room coming in? You know, they come in for one thing, and I'm sure you do a full examination, and you find that somebody has been walking around with COVID and they didn't even know it?
So you do see folks that are positive for COVID, and they weren't aware of it. That was more common earlier in the pandemic than I think today. But you talk to folks and you do meet people that have developed issues, whether it's a chronic neuropathy, meaning a tingling sensation in the fingers and toes. I've seen that. I've seen people, like you said, that have had loss of smell or chronic hoarse voice. So they lose their voice and it doesn't come back. And certainly a brain fog is another one, particularly in older folks. So there's definitely a chunk of folks out there that are struggling.
Yeah. The issue about immunizations, persists about this. There was a time when I could tell you exactly when I had gotten all of my immunizations, what the variants were all named. Now I really don't even remember when I got my last immunization for it all. I don't know. Is it possible to say where we should be with this? A text came in from the 815 area code. We are two people in our 70s. We are both immunocompromised. Our last COVID shot was last September. Is it time for another dose? So what can you tell us generally about where we should be with immunizations for this? And by the way, in my opinion, thank God goodness for the immunizations. Otherwise, COVID would still be killing people the way that it did in the beginning of the pandemic. The immunizations now just mean that maybe you'll just have a cold, a bad symptoms of a bad cold instead of being hospitalized. Am I oversimplifying it?
No, I think that's a great way of simplifying it. And again, when you look at a drug, whether it's a vaccine or Tylenol, there's always a risk. In fact, many people view, this is the example I give people, many people view Tylenol as one of the safest drugs out there. You've got it in your cabinet, you've got it in your travel bag, and you take it when you need it. Well, the number one cause of liver failure in the United States by toxin is Tylenol. So Tylenol can kill you if you overdose on it or take too much of it. And so I think it's just a matter of understanding the risks and benefits. And very clearly, the risks of the vaccine, and there are small risks, right? Nothing is without risk. There are small ones, but they're outweighed by the benefits, like you say. In terms of where we're at, anyone, according to your text or your caller, people 65 years and older, you will be considered up to date if you've got the most recent vaccine doses, the 2023 and 2024 vaccine. So this past fall, Pfizer came out with a booster. And so if you were in that age group or if you're immunocompromised, you'd want to get that.
All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back. Want to get to as many calls and texts for Dr. Jeremy Silver as we can. 312-981-7200. Dr. Jeremy Silver on the line with us today on The Week in Health. If you've got questions, you've got comments, 312-981-7200. Here is the 262 area code. It says, please ask the doctor which NSAID is the safest to take for pain. How do you pronounce that, doctor?
NSAIDs. So non-steroidal anti-inflammatory
drug.
That's
what I was going to say. That's how I'm used to saying it. So
you're right on the money, Dean.
Okay. So you talked about, there could be liver issues for Tylenol. Which are the safest pain reducers right now?
Well, every pain reducer has its upside and downside, and certainly NSAIDs, non-steroidals. And just to be clear for the audience, these are things like Motrin, ibuprofen, Aleve. So those are all kind of in the same category. They all act the same way in terms of the biochemistry of the drug. The downside of NSAIDs is that they can really irritate the stomach, and they can be dangerous to the kidneys and people with diabetes and kidney disease. So number one piece of advice is talk to your doctor, especially if you're not young and healthy. If you are young and healthy, God bless you, and follow the instructions on the package. In terms of which one is safest, they're all relatively safe when taken appropriately.
Aren't certain ones, though, better for headache, and some are better for muscular pain? I mean, aren't there certain pain relievers which are more effective for certain things?
Yes and no. So some of it is really individual dependent. And I will tell you that, you know, so for some folks, we'll swear by Tylenol, for instance, for fever reducer, whereas other folks like ibuprofen, they find it works better. Some people in the setting of headache will swear by Tylenol, and other people really like the Motrin. So they act in different ways, and I don't know that there's necessarily a best one for a condition. Although I will say for joint pain like arthritis and things of that nature, musculoskeletal complaints, I do find that the NSAIDs tend to be more effective, but that's just in my own personal experience.
So the weather is so much nicer these past few days, never mind that it poured raining like a monsoon all day yesterday. For the most part, we've had some pretty nice weather and people are outside and enjoying. What are some of the issues that, you know, we should be most aware of now that summertime is here and people are outside?
Well, I think, Dean, it's just so nice to be able to walk outside in a T-shirt. And many people head right for the swimming pool or the lake or the nearest body of water. And so with young children, and really I'm talking about kids that are kind of under teenage years, especially kids that can't swim or haven't taken swim lessons, but even ones that have, water safety is so important. Drowning is the leading cause of death in kids from the age of 1 to 4 when you take out birth defects. So it's a huge thing, and I think people underappreciate how important it is. And so just keeping an eye on kids, not relying on flotation devices. Those are unreliable. Even if your kid has had swimming lessons, use a buddy system. You know, if you've got a bunch of parents hanging around a pool, just designate someone to be the watcher. Because drowning is silent. It's not the sort of thing where everyone starts yelling and screaming, and yeah. The kid won't make any noise, and the next thing you know, we're at the bottom of the pool.
Yep. Yeah, terrifying. I know when Jim filled in for me a couple of weeks ago, he tried his best to get a conversation going about sunscreens. I can't believe I'm so thankful. I don't want to jinx it now that our phone line hasn't dropped out.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dr.
Silver.
Sorry, Doctor. We did have to bail. I tried 4 times, if you remember.
That he just kept. So just,
some things just aren't meant to be.
Yeah. Don't, believe me, you're not the first one to bail on Jim four or five times in a row. Just real quick, someone's going to be running out to get some sunscreen today. First of all, if I have sunscreen from last year, do I need to get new sunscreen? Does it expire?
You'd have to look at the bottle. You know, I think most of these sunscreens have an expiration date.
Okay.
Although they kind of fit into two categories. You've got the chemical sunscreens and the mineral sunscreens, and I'd be willing to bet the mineral sunscreens have a longer shelf life, but
okay.
That's just my guess.
So in general, should we be looking at a particular number that is considered safest?
And you're talking about the SPF number,
yeah.
I assume.
Higher the number, the better.
The higher, the better, but it does reach a point of diminishing returns. So really, anything over 50, you know, may add a small amount of benefit, but if you're going to be outside for any length of time and the sun is direct, 50 is the way to go.
All right. Good. That's some good advice. We will, I'm sure, get into it more as summer goes on. Doctor, I hope you have a wonderful Sunday today. And thank you for joining us, Dr. Jeremy Silver, the Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital.
Dean, thanks so much. Have a good one.